With Election Day just 1 week away, it's time to prepare your ballot and decide how you'll be voting on all the measures we've covered together. I'm your host, Tess Abraham, and I'll be walking through the California ballot with you to recap all the important issues up for your vote on this week's episode of the California Conversation. Well, my friends, this is a very exciting episode. I can't believe that after so many weeks of diving deep into the California ballot propositions, it's time to go through the ballot and cast the final decision on each measure. It doesn't feel like that long ago that I was staring at the list of all 10 measures, feeling a little intimidated at the prospect of going through each of them. I hope that this podcast has helped to take that intimidation off of your shoulders and instead has empowered you to make informed decisions. Election season seriously feels like my version of the Super Bowl. I am so excited to go to the polls, exercise my civic right and responsibility, and get my I voted sticker next Tuesday. And I sincerely hope that you are feeling excited too. So, what I want to spend the next few minutes doing is actually going through the ballot together. You should have received a sample ballot in the mail. I have it sitting in front of me now. And what I do is go through and mark on my sample ballot who I want to vote for and what I want to vote on each measure. Then I take this to the polls with me on election day and I use it to fill in my actual ballot. Alternatively, if you like to vote by mail, then you can go through the same process and just fill in your mail-in ballot and then drop it off after this episode. Either way, I want this to be a super practical time, so I'll just go down the ballot in the order that the propositions are listed and give you a reminder summary of what each proposition is about, arguments for voting yes and for voting no, and then, of course, my recommendation on how to vote from a conservative, common sense perspective. With all of that being said, grab your sample ballot, your pen, and let's dive in together. Just as a quick note, I'm not going through any candidates on the show because A, that would just take so much time, and B, the names on your ballot will be different depending on the district that you live in. Like I mentioned way back in episode 2 when I covered the legislative process, representatives are split out between elections based on odd and even numbered districts, and each representative runs to represent a certain district. So if you don't live in the same district as me, then going through all the candidates on my ballot won't be helpful to you. Instead, I've posted some resources on my website, and I'll link those in today's show notes as well, for websites that give you information on candidates running in this year's election throughout California. You'll have to do a little of that research on your own, but hopefully you will have the time and energy to dedicate to that portion of the ballot since you're already equipped with information on the propositions. And lastly, before we get started, going through and trying to summarize in a few bullet points all the background, statistics, pros and cons that we've walked through for each proposition was really hard because there's so much detail to each topic. So I would highly recommend that you go back and listen to previous episodes for a fuller picture of what each proposition is addressing, especially for any that seem confusing or if it doesn't seem clear as to why I recommend voting the way that I do. Each episode is just 20 to 30 minutes, and it gives you an in-depth picture as to what the proposition will do, who supports it and why, who opposes it and why, background and statistics, and of course, my full response. With all of that being said, let's go through a quick summary of each. First up on the list of propositions is Proposition 2, which authorizes a $10 billion bond for public school and community college facilities. Proponents of the proposition argue that the money will go toward funding much-needed infrastructure repair within public school districts across the state. Back in episode 5, we discussed that the sale of a bond requires the debt to be repaid over time with the cost of interest. The government repays public school bonds from the general fund, and the money in that fund comes from taxpayer dollars. Oftentimes, to repay bonds, state or local governments will increase tax rates on residents to raise the funds necessary to cover the additional cost. Proposition 2 would be paid back over a period of 35 years, and it would accumulate to a total cost of $17.5 billion. California is currently paying off $80 billion in previously issued bonds, which breaks down to $6 billion per year. Proposition 2 would increase this amount by $500 million each year. Can our state government afford this increased cost? Well, the state of the budget would answer that question with no. At June 30th, 2024, our budget closed the fiscal year in a deficit of $38 billion, and the Legislative Analyst Office is projecting that we'll end June 2025 in a $68 billion deficit or more. When it comes to the public school system, 57% of our state budget was spent on K-12 education for 2023. Yet, California public education was ranked 40th out of all 50 states for student success. Prop 2 is meant specifically for infrastructure repairs, as 38% of students in 2020 attended schools with below standard facilities. However, the language in the measure is so vague that it is hard to tell what exactly the money will be spent for. Additionally, if the state already spends over half the general fund budget on education, what reassurance do voters have that more funding will prove effective? My recommendation is to remember that you can acknowledge that public schools need infrastructure repairs and students should be able to go to schools that are safe for them and are a conducive learning environment. Yet, you can also acknowledge that the $10 billion bond proposed in Prop 2 is not the most effective solution to the problem. It seems like it will have negative outcomes on the taxpayer in an already high-tax state, and it will be spent irresponsibly by a government who has proven to us time and time again that they cannot be trusted to be transparent about spending. My recommendation is to vote no on Proposition 2. Next is Proposition 3, a constitutional amendment that proposes changing the language in the California Constitution from reading as marriage being between a man and a woman to instead say that the right to marry is a fundamental right. Gay marriage was legalized in California back in 2013 and was further guaranteed by the Supreme Court Obergefell decision in 2016. Proponents of Prop 3 say that the language is outdated and not in effect in the state and should therefore be removed and replaced in alignment with the view that the state of California takes on marriage. However, we talked about the dangers posed by the suggested language change, as it removes all restrictions from the definition of marriage and opens the door to other non-traditional family structures beyond homosexual relationships, like polyamory or incest. Additionally, we looked at studies conducted by Princeton University and other organizations that cited damage to children because of the rise of non-traditional family units that remove children's biological mother and father from their lives. Lastly, beyond these societal impacts, we also discussed what the Bible has to say about marriage, which is that it is created and designed by God to be between one man and one woman. As a Christian myself, I could never vote to redefine marriage as something other than how God designed it. My recommendation is to vote no on Proposition 3. This brings us to Proposition 4, another $10 billion bond proposal, this time to fund various climate and environmental initiatives. Some key issues addressed by the proposition are water supply, wildfire prevention, rising sea levels, land conservation, energy infrastructure, local and state parks, extreme heat, and farms and agriculture. Proponents of Prop 4 argue that these are critical issues facing our state due to a changing climate, and we need the bond funding to enact programs that reduce these threats. On the opposing side, we again can boil down arguments to budgetary considerations and policy implications. The same budgetary considerations that I just mentioned related to the bond put forward in Proposition 2 exist for this bond proposal as well. This climate bond would have a total cost of $16 billion with repayments spread over 40 years. This would add an additional $400 million to the $6 billion a year that our state already spends on bond repayment. What is compelling when it comes to policy is that there are already several climate programs in place seeking to address the same issues mentioned in Proposition 4, yet they have not been proven to be effective. In 2022, Gavin Newsom and the legislature passed through his California Climate Commitment Plan, which was a $54 billion spending plan for many of the same initiatives. Even as these programs were put in place and funded, when it comes to key issues like water supply management or wildfire prevention, the solutions that they've tried enacting have only made the problems worse. The idea that we should continue funding similar initiatives using a bond, which will inevitably raise taxes on California residents, even though the initiatives have not been proven effective, should be questioned. I'll repeat what I said when we originally covered this issue together. Environmental policies are not bad in and of themselves to support. We want to take care of the environment. But when it comes to matters of policy positions, we have to advocate for wise, prudent, and effective uses of money, which means we have to look realistically at how helpful environmental policies will be and refuse to support those that waste money on activities that will not actually help the environment in any meaningful way. Because of that, my recommendation is to vote no on Proposition 4. Next is Proposition 5, a constitutional amendment to lower the number of votes required to pass local bonds related to public infrastructure or housing assistance from a 2/3 or 66% supermajority down to a 55% majority vote. Supporters of Prop 5 argued that a majority vote should be enough to allow local governments to borrow money to fund these issues. Supporters also note that lowering the threshold will make it easier for these types of bond initiatives to be passed, and therefore make local governments less dependent on statewide bonds or funding. However, we discussed a few reasons on why this may not be such a great idea. First, these types of bonds do result in an increase to taxes, specifically property taxes, in order to raise the funds to pay for them. Second, the definition of public infrastructure or housing assistance can encompass pretty much every type of bond, which means that almost every local bond would require 11% less votes to pass. Lastly, the logical conclusion to lowering the voting requirement is the easier passage of several more bonds, which the California Taxpayers Association estimates will result in an increase of at least $250 million in taxes. This becomes disastrous because of the incentive that it creates by local governments to take on more debt, which increases taxes, and then because of the long-term effects that this will have due to the length of time that it takes to pay back bonds. Robert Ault, the president of a conservative public policy think tank, put it this way, quote, supermajority requirements ensure that people who are out of favor with the ruling class have protections from the whims of the majority. The passage of bonds with such serious economic effects on California residents should be taken seriously, not flippantly. To that end, I recommend you vote no on Proposition 5. The last constitutional amendment on the ballot is Proposition 6, which would amend the state constitution to prohibit involuntary servitude from being used as a punishment by the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation for crime. It would also prohibit prisons from disciplining prisoners for refusing work assignments. Supporters of Proposition 6 argue that requiring prisoners to work jobs that they're not allowed to refuse is a form of slavery, and it is inhumane treatment of inmates. They base this argument off the fact that inmates are often paid an average of 74 cents per hour, which of course would be illegal outside of prison, and also that they face retaliation if they refuse to do the work. Further, this amendment was recommended by the Task Force to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans, as the group argues that African Americans are disproportionately affected and have the wrongs of slavery continually perpetuated against them through the prison system. However, we discussed on the show that prison work greatly differs from slavery because slavery is defined as a person who is owned by someone else through their forcible capture or acquisition. Forced work assignments are not the same, as a person can simply avoid them through not committing the crimes that put them in prison. Also, the very purposes of prison do not include being easy, comfortable, or fun. Prison is designed to remove criminals from society, to punish and deter crime, and to help to reform prisoners. Prison work programs have actually been proven to be effective in reducing recidivism and helping inmates to adjust better to life after prison. Lastly, asking prisoners to do basic jobs, like working in the kitchens or doing the laundry, is not an inhumane ask. It's requiring them to contribute to the system around them in the same ways that you and I are responsible to work and take care of ourselves and our families on a daily basis. For all of those reasons, vote no on Proposition 6. Next, we come to our most recently covered proposition, Proposition 32, which I'm sure you all remember from last week is the measure seeking to raise the minimum wage from $16 per hour to $18 per hour. Supporters of raising the minimum wage argue that California's cost of living is so high that the current wage is not livable. If workers are given a higher wage, they argue that then they can pour that money back into California's economy and potentially reduce the use of taxpayer-funded government benefits. On the other hand, there are many reasons to oppose a minimum wage hike. For starters, from a purely economic standpoint, raising the minimum wage has been proven to increase inflation, which contributes to the high cost of living in our state. Secondly, it hurts businesses as employers have to adjust to the higher cost of labor. This historically has led to layoffs, reduction in employee hours or benefits, higher prices to the consumer, and the closure of business locations. We saw this exact scenario with the recent increase in minimum wage across California for food workers up to $20 per hour. There are countless stories of restaurants closing their doors or reducing their staffing as a direct result of the wage hike. This is especially hard on small businesses who have small profit margins to begin with. We should be encouraging small businesses as they contribute competition to our economy and represent the very heartbeat of innovation in the American dream. At the end of the day, we come to just another Band-Aid fix that isn't addressing the root cause of the issue, high cost of living, and rather just covers over it, or worse, contributes to it. For that reason, vote no on Proposition 32. On to Proposition 33. We are almost there. We just have four more to cover. Proposition 33 was one of my most listened to episodes until it was surpassed by minimum wage. So it seems to be a topic of great interest to you all. And that topic is rent control. Proposition 33 would expand what types of properties and by how much local governments can impose rent control in their cities and counties. It would expand the ability of local governments to enact rent control laws on single-family homes, which are currently exempt from rent control. It would expand the ability to limit rents for new tenants, and it would also prevent future legislation from restraining local rent control laws. Supporters of Proposition 33 use a similar argument that we've heard for other propositions: high cost of living in California. 44% of our state's population are renters, which is 9% higher than the national average of renters. But even worse than that, California is third in line for the state with the most rental stress, with 30% of renters reporting that they spend over half their income on rent. Proponents argue that Prop 33 will work to make housing more affordable across the state. However, on the other side of the argument, the Legislative Analyst's Office asserts that the root cause for the high cost of housing across the state is high demand and low supply. This issue isn't fixed by rent control, but rather is exacerbated by it, as capping rental rates disincentivizes landlords from renting at all. It also discourages development of further properties because developers know that their potential profits will be restricted by rent control legislation. Both of these effects reduce supply even more and contribute to the very cause of the rental affordability crisis. Once again, to avoid promoting ineffective solutions to underlying issues, I have to recommend vote no on Proposition 33. Next is Proposition 34, which would require certain healthcare organizations to spend 98% of their revenue from the federal drug discount program on direct patient care. You will recall that the federal drug discount program was created by Congress to require manufacturers of prescription drugs to sell them at a discount to specific entities known as covered entities. It then permits these covered entities to sell the discounted drugs at a higher price point to generate revenue. The goal of the program was to make a way for entities that serve vulnerable patient populations to earn revenue that would allow them to provide more comprehensive health services to those populations. Proposition 34 would restrict the ways that you could spend revenue, and it would create rules to enforce the original purpose of the program by requiring qualified organizations to track and report how revenues are spent. Supporters of the proposition argue that greater transparency is needed to ensure that organizations that benefit from the federal program actually help low-income patients. However, when we looked in detail at the elements of the organizations Prop 34 would apply to, we uncovered that so far it only applies to one organization, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. This foundation happens to be the chief political opponent to the main supporters of Prop 34, raising questions about the true motive of the proposition. It also begs the question of if this measure will be ruled as a bill of attainder by the courts should it be passed, which would then render it illegal and ineffective. It is not just the outcome of legislation that matters, but the precedents that you set while doing it. You cannot target your political opponents through legislation, and you can't simply bypass the Constitution or the protections of legislation because you want a certain outcome. That sets a dangerous precedent that might be in your favor today, but certainly won't be in your favor tomorrow. Because of those reasons, while I want to support the transparency and revenue requirements proposed, I have to recommend that you vote no on Proposition 34. All right, on to Proposition 35. This would make the health plan tax permanent in California and restrict how the funds from the tax can be spent. There's a ton of detail in understanding this proposition, but to try to summarize, the health plan tax is levied on healthcare providers, the companies that enroll you in health insurance, and the revenues collected are matched by the federal government, which is then used to pay for Medi-Cal in the state. Proposition 35 would make this a permanent tax so that it wouldn't have to be reapproved every few years, and it would require that revenue from the tax be spent on specific Medi-Cal programs. Proponents argue that this will ensure further investment in California's healthcare and continue to increase access to healthcare. They argue that Proposition 35 is meant to hold Governor Newsom to his word and prevent him from using the tax revenue to fill in the gaps of the budget deficit. One of the things he had promised to do is raise the rates for providers who see low-income patients like Medi-Cal patients, because so far they're underpaid and thus disincentivized from helping these patients. However, opponents argue that while the goal of Proposition 35 is good, it is not the most effective solution, as it makes another tax permanent and restricts its revenue to certain healthcare programs, thus rendering it unavailable for other priorities and less flexible to respond to any changes in Medi-Cal funding that could come in future years. Governor Newsom argues that it prevents him and the legislature from being able to balance the budget. My recommendation stems from the belief that while holding Governor Newsom accountable is a good idea, I cannot support a permanent tax that funds programs like abortion care, gender-affirming care, and medical insurance for undocumented immigrants. It also doesn't fix the root cause of the provider problem, which is a healthcare system that caps payment to providers by its very design. Overall, this is not a great option if, like me, you don't agree with the Medicare system, the types of care that it funds, and how it uses taxpayer money. Lastly, by making the tax permanent, it makes it harder to change how the system operates or to lessen the amount funded by tax dollars in future years. My recommendation is to vote no on Proposition 35. And that brings us to the last statewide measure on our ballot, and the very first proposition that we covered together back on episode 3 of the show, Proposition 36. This proposition would raise certain theft and drug crimes from misdemeanors to felonies. These crimes were originally lowered to misdemeanors by Proposition 47 back in 2014. Proponents of Prop 36 cite rising shoplifting and drug crimes across the state as the main reason for the change. They argue that increasing the classification back up to felonies and thus enacting harsher penalties when these crimes are committed will work to deter criminals and lower the frequency of these crimes occurring. This will also help businesses that have had to close their doors due to concerns about crime, as well as individuals affected by the inflow and sale of drugs, which has skyrocketed across our state in the last few years. Opponents of the proposition argue that this will result in higher numbers of prisoners and that the California prison system is already overcrowded and cannot absorb the population increase. Opponents also argue that Prop 36 will come with an increased cost during a time of budgetary restrictions due to the fact that more funding will need to go to the prison system as more criminals are sentenced to jail time. I'm convinced that reversing these crimes back to felonies is a good start, but I'm also convinced it's not addressing the underlying issues. We need even further reform to our prison systems, to our state budget, and to the prioritization of policy issues that our tax dollars should fund. We also need greater resources allocated to our police officers and our district attorneys. But a good way to start addressing these issues is my recommendation to vote yes on Proposition 36. Well, that covers all the statewide measures on our ballots for this election. Just to reiterate what I said earlier, each proposition has so much background to it, so if you have questions on any of the topics that I just went through at a high level, then I would encourage you to find the episode related to the proposition and give it a listen. You can also go to my website, where I've compiled all my research on each proposition, along with my responses and recommendations, so those are available to you as resources as you prepare to vote. The last thing I want to cover today is just a reminder as to why it's so important that you vote in this election and why it's important to encourage others around you to vote as well. Going back to the very first episode of this show, we spent time discussing why you should care as a citizen of our country. In America, we elect our government leaders to represent our ideas, which means that our participation is not just a mere example of good civics, but it is required. That doesn't end with participation in national politics either. It extends to state politics as well. You might vote for a presidential candidate who shares your views, but live in a state completely opposed to them. This election is your chance to make your voice heard on issues directly affecting your state, where you live, and issues that will directly affect your life. Each issue is vitally important, from minimum wage to rent control to the health plan tax to the definition of marriage. It's only when every citizen of a state participates and expresses their vote on issues like these that the will of the people can be fairly determined, and in turn, the people can be fairly governed. Remember, in the March 2024 primary, only 34% of registered voters in California cast their ballot. We need to do better this election. We need to show up in large numbers. Why? Because you can. Because this is how we make a difference. And to those of you who feel like your vote doesn't matter in California, also remember that Proposition 1, which was the measure on the ballot in March, only passed by 28,000 votes. It was a slim margin of victory, to say the least. There are real opportunities for change if we just have the conviction and the courage to show up. For the Christian, now is the time to seek the good of the people around you, to entrust yourself under the sovereign hand of God by not diminishing your responsibility to act, and to express gratitude for the incredible freedoms afforded to you in our great country. We vote with full belief in the plan of God, and we vote because He has called us to restrain evil and seek what is good. We will not be people who are complacent to what's happening around us, who close our eyes and bury our head in the sand when the tides of politics and culture don't swing our way. We instead will do our part, will uphold and exercise our freedoms, and will do so full of joy and excitement of what God is doing in and through us. Ronald Reagan said it best when he said, quote, "The right to vote is the crown jewel of American liberties, and we will not see its luster diminished." Take part in that crown jewel of our liberties, my fellow Americans, and go vote. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you want my voter guide for this election, check out the link in my show notes. And if you want more information on any of the propositions summarized here today, go back and listen through the previous episodes of the show. Also, you will want to tune in later this week for a very special surprise episode that you do not want to miss before Election Day. And of course, next week, we will be back here for a special Election Day episode. Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends, family, and fellow Californians. I'll see you back here later this week for another episode of the California Conversation.